This is Case Closed, 1 hour of mystery and crime from the Golden Age of Radio, every Wednesday at relicradio.com. Our first story comes from yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We'll hear the wrong doctor matter from August 13th, 1961. After that, it's the Triangle Murder Case from Rogues Gallery. That story aired February 21st, 1946.
Johnny Dollar.
Come on back, Johnny.
What?
I said come on back here is all.
Well, why not? Only where and who's that?
The where is here in Corpus Christi, and this is Jack Price.
Jackson, haven't you had enough of me lately?
Sure we have, but that's beside the point.
Now, wait a minute, Jack.
Well?
Don't tell me you and Doug Johnstone have finally found that old Spanish treasure we were all looking for last week.
No, thanks. And I thought we made it plain we've had our fill of that caper. Seriously, Johnny.
Yeah?
What happened to us out there on Padre Island kind of proves a point, doesn't it?
That in this world of ours, you simply don't get something for nothing?
Right. And sometimes when you try to, you may lose everything. Like young Jose Pineda lost his life.
Yeah. Jackson, from here on, I'm perfectly willing to work for what I need and want. Now that we've got the lecture on philosophy over and done with...
How'd you like to take on another case down here?
Why not? As long as you're willing to pay the old expense account.
Well, of course.
Without questions or checking it over too carefully.
Oh, hold it.
Plus, of course, a nice big fat extra fee.
Hello, operator.
Operator?
Must be a wrong connection. The man I was talking to was that fine, generous, self-sacrificing, do-it-for-nothing gentleman by the name of Johnny Dollar.
Do-it-for-nothing?
Okay, that do-nothing gentleman.
That's more like it.
Seriously, Johnny?
Yes, seriously.
Come on down here, will you? Right away.
What's up?
The makings of an international incident, maybe.
Oh, you better call in the U.S. Marines.
Be serious, will you?
Well, who's kidding?
I'm afraid one of my clients is mixed up in the narcotics racket. And you know what that could mean.
That he's not long for this world.
That's right. Unless you can straighten things out for him.
Narcotics, huh? It sounds like a big order.
Don't kid yourself, Johnny. It is. And it could be kind of dangerous. Well?
You know something, Jackson?
Yeah?
When somebody calls me in on a case that's supposed to be a lead pipe cinch, I always nearly get my head shot off, you know, like last week.
Yeah?
So maybe this one that looks kind of big and dangerous. Well, who knows? Maybe this will turn out to be a lead pipe cinch.
Well, don't bank on it.
Oh, I won't. But why not give it a try? I'll grab a plane that'll get me down there first thing tomorrow morning.
The CBS Radio Network brings you Mandel Kramer in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Tri-Western Life Insurance Company Corpus Christi office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the wrong doctor matter. Expense account item one, shortly after midnight, $132.21. That's for a taxi out to Bradley Field and a plane ticket to Corpus Christi, Texas. As promised, I arrived early in the morning. Too early for Jack Price's office to be open, and there was no sign of him around the airport. So item two is $3 for a cab to the Robert Driscoll, where I grabbed some breakfast. That's item three, $1.30. Then, went up to my room, unpacked my bag, showered, shaved. All right. Johnny Dollar.
Jack Price, Johnny. I thought you might have signed in there at the hotel.
Well, after all, Jackson, if you weren't up early enough to meet me at the airport...
Oh, I've been up all right and down at the office. Now, this thing is even harder than I thought it would be.
Oh?
Yeah, you see, this client, his name is Julio Olvera.
Sounds Mexican.
He is.
Now, go on.
Julio worked the shrimp boats, you know, down the Mexican coast, mm-hmm. and they dumped their catch off here.
Yeah, so?
Well, one of them started hauling narcotics up here, heroin. Much easier than smuggling it across the border on land. Now, Julio happened to be on board, so the judge gave him 3 years in the clink. But now he's out again.
And back in the dope racket?
Not if he can help it, Johnny. I'm sure of it.
Not if he can help it?
Right. But I got a call from his girlfriend, Consuelo Diaz. Real nice little girl, used to work here in this office.
Uh-huh.
And according to her... Well, anyhow, I promised her I'd send for you. Because, Johnny, what's happened is this.
I'm listening.
Only wait, I try to explain it over the phone.
That's right, you're only a few blocks away.
Right, so come on over here to the office, I'll give you the whole story.
Right.
Okay.
Now, let's see, I better take along the old 38 lemon squeezer. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure I put my hat somewhere. Ah, there we are. Now, off to the races, Johnny. Yes?
Room service.
Room service?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, you must have made some mistake.
There's no mistakes in your dollar.
Isn't the silencer on that thing just a bit corny in this day and
age? Back up so I can come in and close the door.
Sure, as long as you hold the gun and with that chambermaid coming down the hall.
I said inside.
Never let it be said that Johnny Dollar isn't the perfect host.
Try and trick me, huh?
You may be pretty big.
Too big for you, senor.
Oh, my goodness. What's happened? What's happened here?
My friend, he hurt himself.
But I thought I heard a shot.
No, he fell. He fell against the door. He hurt himself very bad.
Oh, my goodness.
See, you go on downstairs. You get the doctor, eh?
Oh, yes, I surely will. I'll get the doctor right away.
Yes, see, pronto. And by the time the doctor he arrive here, Senor Dollar, you will be very dead.
Through the breeze, a hanging by her knees, up on the high trapeze. But first, may we suggest a 7-Up you test. Its fresh, clean taste is best. Come be Louise's guest. No time to waste. You'll love that fresh, clean taste. As you fresh up with 7-Up, your thirst is quickly chased. The curtain's going up, so bring your 7-Up. And we will watch Louise swing on the high trapeze. Oh, she knows how to chill you. She really loves to thrill you. But what she likes best when it's time to rest is sparkling 7-Up.
What did you say?
For the very best when it's time to rest, fresh up with 7-Up.
I learned it a long time ago. When you're as outmatched as I was by this big Mexican gorilla, you play it smart if you want to stay alive. Which explains why I let that glancing blow of his send me to the floor with my knees pulled up against my belly. After the chambermaid left, as he closed the door and leveled his gun at me.
And by the time the doctor he arrived here, Senor Dollar, you will be very dead.
I kicked out with all I had. The gun flew out of his hand across the floor, but he left it lay there and turned on me. He was big and he was tough. But that kick in the stomach had slowed him down a little. I caught him with a hard left that staggered him, but only for a second. He came back at me with a chair and everything else he could pick up and swing or throw at me. I tried to get inside of those long, powerful arms to work on his midsection and maybe open him up for a blow to the chin, but he just hung on.
I kill you.
He locked my arms to my side, and grabbing his hands behind my back with his powerful arms, he started to squeeze.
I break you in two.
A terrible pressure against my ribs and against my spine. I wondered how long before my bones would...
Hey, what's going on in there? Open up.
He's killing him.
Open up in there.
Break down the door. First I break you.
Open up.
Here, I've got a key.
A key? Well, give it to me. What's the matter with you?
Here you are.
That's too late. Looks like I got here too late.
You mean he's dead? Oh, I knew it. I knew something was wrong here.
And now maybe... Let me see now.
That's why I got you instead of the doctor. You being the house detective and all. I just...
Now, wait a minute. Where's the man who did this to him? You said it was a big fella?
Yeah. Look. Hiding there behind the door.
That's right, senor.
Now, just take it easy, Johnny. The doctor says you've got a rest. Take it easy.
Oh, Jackson.
Yeah.
Oh, Jack.
That's right. Mm. Another little sip of this brandy the doctor ordered.
Yeah.
Lie still, you bum. Here, take a slug of this.
Oh, brother, what a reception committee you have in this town.
According to the chambermaid, she smelled trouble and brought the house dick up here. Well, it looks like your reception committee must have been Hernandez.
Hernandez?
Diego Hernandez. When we had Mitch out there at the airport, I didn't dream that Hernandez might find out about your coming here.
Who is he, Jack?
Well, you remember I mentioned Julio Olvera to you over the phone?
Oh, yeah, the one that's just out of the pen.
Yeah. Hernandez was skipper of that shrimp boat.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one who was running the heroin up here from somewhere in Mexico. As you know, that could mean from somewhere way to the south or from just barely across the border.
Yeah, I know.
But more important, Hernandez is the one who was never caught. He skipped across the border and disappeared.
I see.
But then Consuelo, that's young Julio's girl, and Johnny, she's the one who convinced me that Julio is on the up and up, keeping his nose clean. You got it all straight now, Johnny?
Yeah, I think so. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, she's the one who called me. She'd found out somehow that Diego Hernandez was here in town again. And that's when I called you in Hartford.
And you didn't tell the police?
Yeah, no, I should have.
Well, sure you should have. Probably the Narcotics Bureau, too.
Well, they all know it now, of course. You see, when you didn't come to the office and I came over here and found out what had happened to you...
What about the girl, Consuelo?
Well, she was afraid, and I don't blame her, that Hernandez had come here to get young Julio.
Why?
Because it was his testimony in court 3 years ago that put the finger on Diego Hernandez and his drug racket.
Oh, I see.
But anyhow, early this morning, she called me again. Hernandez had been out there to see her to try and make her tell him where he could find Julio.
And did she?
No. In spite of Diego's claim that he only wanted Julio in on a business deal, which, of course, is exactly what she didn't do.
What's the matter?
Of course.
What?
She must have been the one who told Hernandez you were coming here. You know, in the hope it would scare him off.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, Consuelo, whatever your name is.
Yeah. But the point is this, Johnny. And darn it, I forgot to tell the police, but they'll be coming here any minute now to talk with you about this attack. I'll tell them then.
Tell them what, Jack?
Consuelo had no way of warning young Julio. He's been out of town coming back this morning. He'll be stopping by to see Consuelo. But if Hernandez goes back there and finds him there... Heaven help him.
Come on, Jackson. We got...
Oh. Now, you stay in that bed, Johnny. Now, take it easy.
What's the matter with you? We got to get to Julio and that girl before he does, if we're not too late already.
Well, Johnny, when the police come...
Well, will you stop wasting time and help me get into my clothes?
But the police are on their way up here now.
All
right,
now, we'll leave them a note or something. That's
well, like I said, Johnny, I haven't yet told them about Consuelo and Julio,
Jackson,
and everything.
Over there at the desk. You write them a note while I finish dressing, and don't waste any time about it. Consuelo's little house was way out at the edge of town, in a very sparsely populated area. I knew the minute that we pulled up in front of it that we'd got there too late. The front door was wide open. Inside was still the smell of cordite from that pistol with the silencer on it. Yeah, Diego Hernandez had got there first, all right, and done his job well. Too well. In the doorway lay the body of young Julio. Just one whelling bullet must have killed him instantly. The little Consuelo, young, pretty, dark-haired Consuelo, was still alive. And she tried to drag herself to the phone on a nearby table, but she just lay there gasping, barely out of reach of it. While Jackson called the police and a doctor, I carried her into the bedroom and I went to work with a couple of wet towels and a bottle of tequila I found. Then, finally...
No. No. It is no use, senor.
Oh, now, sure it is, Consuelo. Sure it is. You're going to be all right. The doctor will be here in a couple of minutes, and he'll get that bullet out of your back.
No. With my Julio gone... Do not want to leave now.
Oh, Consuelo, come on now. Listen to me. Tell me, what was it, Hernandez, Consuelo? Was it Diego Hernandez who did this?
See? He will want my Julio to help him again.
He wanted him to help him in the heroin racket again.
See, to go with him. To help him.
To go with him where, Consuelo? Consuelo, listen to me. Did Hernandez tell you where he's operating?
Down at police headquarters working with a young Sergeant Ortiz, trying to locate a Dr. Velasquez there in Corpus Christi. There in any city on the Gulf Coast, anywhere in Texas even. We must have run up a phone bill of several hundred dollars, but it was no go.
Si. Si, gracias. Muchas gracias.
Nothing again, Sergeant?
Nothing, sir. Again.
Mm. Well, unless this map here is lying, we have covered every single town this side of the Mexican border. Look at it. I've circled them all.
I know. But if he went to a Dr. Velasquez and the girl was sure of it...
And of course, down in Mexico, a name like that is probably as... Wait a minute.
What is it, Miss Adela?
Of course she told us where he is. Here, right in front of our noses on this map. Look, Sergeant, don't you see it?
Yes.
Only about 50 miles below the border.
And others here, other towns also named after people, you see? Here's one called General Bravo. Here's Dr. Gonzalez, Dr. Scott. Little town.
The one we care about is this one, Sergeant. The town they call Dr. Velasquez.
Yes?
And of course, that's where he works his racket. Right there below the border in Dr. Velasquez. Okay, Sergeant.
Yeah, but Mr. Dollar, by the time the necessary contact can be made with the policia down there, by the time the necessary papers can be drawn up, and look, here it is such a small town on just a little side road, and in such a desert country...
That's all the better. That means if I take things into my own hands, there'll be nobody around to interfere.
You would go down there alone, without the authorization?
After what Hernandez did? The attack on me, two murders, and heaven only knows how many people he's killed with this filthy heroin.
You are right. But he has had such a start on you in a fast car. Even now, he could be well across the border.
All the better. It's down there in that wasteland that I'm just dying to meet him. And if I'm lucky, maybe I can get down there ahead of him.
But how?
Yeah, I'll be waiting for him at the town of Dr. Velasquez.
But how can you? And the day, it is getting late, Mr. Dollar.
Sergeant, whatever I may do from here on out, you know something... It's none of your business,
hmm? You're right. It's none of my business.
Good.
I know nothing.
Good. If only I knew somebody around here with a light plane I could charter and no questions asked. I mean, if you should just happen to have a friend or a friend of a friend. Of course, you don't know what I'm thinking of, but...
Oh, no, of course not. But why don't we go out to my squad car and take a little ride, huh? It's a beautiful afternoon, huh?
Let's go, Sergeant. That little single-engine plane was a beauty. Incidentally, item 4 on the expense account is $250 to that friend of a friend. It was getting late, though, and I opened the throttle wide, flying a rather erratic course in the hope I wouldn't be intercepted crossing the border. Luckily, I wasn't. Then, with only a highway map to guide me, and believe me, the sun was getting mighty low now, I finally found the place I was looking for. The so-called town of Dr. Velasquez wasn't even a crossroads. It was just a handful of ramshackle buildings out there in the middle of a desert some 20 miles north of the nearest decent piece of highway. Along the rough dirt road leading to it was a bare space where, by wrestling the controls a bit, I managed to set down. Then I taxied carefully onto that road, blocking it off. Why? Because in the last rays of the sun, I'd seen a cloud of dust that said there was a car on the road heading my way. Hernandez? I hope so. If not, I'd simply have to stay there and wait for him. Or rather, stay nearby in a clump of mesquite. It was Hernandez, all right. And as the headlights picked up the plane, barring his way...
Just hold everything, Hernandez. And don't reach for that gun.
You. You again.
That's right. Keep him up over your head.
What are you doing out here?
What's your guess?
I will kill you, Senor Dollar. Like I meant to kill you before.
Sorry. This time I have the gun on you.
It will do you no good.
Turn around. Keep those hands up in the air.
I will kill you. Remember that.
Aren't you getting a little tired of killing? This gun of yours will be a nice souvenir. Thanks.
So? You have what you call the advantage, eh?
That's right.
But not for long.
Well, we'll see about that. All right, put your hands down slowly. Put them behind your back.
You're not afraid to let me lower the hands, eh?
Do it, but slowly.
Very well. But it gives me the chance, senor. The one chance.
Yes, for what?
Have you never heard of the gun in the sleeve?
No, you don't.
I kill you.
Why don't I ever lend a frisk one of these punks before I let him lower his hands? Next time I might not be so lucky. It was well after dark when I finally got us back to Corpus Christi, and I had quite a time landing in the small private field from which I'd borrowed the plane. Sergeant Otis, of course, denied any knowledge of the whole thing, but I noticed the landing lights were on and waiting for me, and also, by pure coincidence, a young fellow from the narcotics squad just happened to be there to meet me. Nor did he suggest that I might have picked up my prisoner anywhere but this side of the border. Just the same, Jackson, maybe it wouldn't hurt to keep this report under wraps for a while. Expense account total, including board and room, the trip home, $532.40. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
If you ever suffer a touch of arthritis or rheumatism, and you've never tried Mentholatum Deep Heating Rub, you can't know how good its deep heating action can make you feel. As you massage it into painful areas, you feel its deep heating action. You know relief is on its way. Mentholatum Deep Heating Rub is an extra strong combination of active ingredients for safe, temporary relief of minor arthritic rheumatic pain. Use greaseless, stainless Mentholatum Deep Heating Rub often. Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, one murder, three suspects, and each of them with plenty of reason, plenty of opportunity. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar is written by Jack Johnstone, produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Johnny Dollar is played by Mandel Kramer. Also featured in our cast were Ralph Camargo as Diego, Bob Dryden as the sergeant, Deli Sonnenberg as Consuelo, Lawson Zerby as the voice, Maurice Tarplin as Price, and Hilda Haynes as the maid. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Stuart Metz speaking. ¶¶
W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo and Fitch's shaving creams, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. You know, there's something about me that is to trouble what molasses is to flies. I never go around looking for trouble. Trouble goes around looking for me. Now, take that afternoon a few months ago when I walked into the press room of the Hall of Justice and found, among others, Clark Ames, the young City Hall reporter for the Chronicle, expounding on his favorite subject, a deep hatred for a man named Fred Curtis, nicknamed the Alibi Master. Ames and the other newspaper men had watched Curtis win acquittals for a dozen different clients and always by the same route. Unbreakable alibis. This made the clients very happy and the district attorney very miserable. The Chronicle, a crusading newspaper, had, at the instigation of Clark Ames, been running an anti-Curtis campaign, bordering pretty close on libel. And Curtis, who was sharper than a razor's edge and harder to catch up with on the horizon, hated Ames with a wonderful passion. Curtis had won the last round, and Ames was telling me about it.
So Curtis goes to Williams, my managing editor, and threatens a libel suit. Well, I had gone a little overboard, I guess, and Williams had to let me go. Temporary layoff until the heat died down. But now I'm back on the job, Brogue, and I'm solid. And you wait until that phony Curtis sees me sitting here. Wait till he finds out I'm back on the job. Huh?
Now look, Ames, I've been around this town for a while, and if I'm picking out a guy to buck, it won't be Fred Curtis. How come you decided to make a career of locking horns with the smartest mouthpiece in the business? How do you expect to win?
Oh, don't worry about it, Rogue. I got that phony right where I want him. You wait a couple of days, that's all. Mr. Alibi Master Curtis is going to be nailed to the Chronicle's masthead.
Hello, Ames. Did I hear you taking my name in vain?
Could be.
How uninteresting. What are you doing sitting around in the press room? It's reserved for the working press. Hello, Rogue.
How are you? How's your trial going, Curtis?
Oh, my client will have dinner at home tonight. Jury just retired.
Your client is guilty as the devil, Curtis. What's his alibi this time?
Now you know he couldn't have committed the crime. I've just proved to the jury that he was in San Francisco at the time the murder was committed. How are you getting along on your unemployment insurance, Ames? It was a pleasure getting you fired.
Too bad it didn't last. Well, I'm back on the job, which means I'm right back on your trail. That's bad news for you, Curtis.
Do me a favor, will you, Ames? When you call in the report of the not guilty verdict the jury's about to bring in for my client, tell your stupid managing editor I'm filing a libel action against him the first thing in the morning.
Look, Curtis, let's go in the courtroom, will you? I'm going to be there when the jury comes in.
Okay, Rogue. Oh, here, Ames, here's $10. Go get a haircut, will you, kid? And have your suit pressed. And don't forget to spell my name correctly when you phone that story in.
Here's your $10 right in your face, Curtis. I'll see that your name is spelled right. In the biggest type in the shop, right at the top of the page, when you're tried for falsifying evidence. And that's going to happen to you awfully soon, wise guy.
Here. Take it easy, Ames.
Oh, let him talk.
Let me give you something to kick around in that warped mind of yours, Curtis. You remember a guy named Don Thompson? Your alibi witness for Ed Harris a year ago. I'm sure you remember Thompson.
What about him?
Would it put a crimp in that famous poise of yours if you knew that Thompson had given the Chronicle a signed and witness statement admitting that he had perjured himself in that alibi statement for Harris?
That is preposterous.
Is it? Well, you'd be in quite a spot if the Chronicle happened to have a statement like that, wouldn't you, Curtis? A statement that swears that you paid Don Thompson $1,000 for the perjured testimony that kept Ed Harris out of the gas chamber? That'd sure stop your clock, wouldn't it?
Have you been drinking, Ames? You sound even a little more illogical than usual.
Oh, that's right. You like logic, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, figure this one out. I've been trying for some time to get convicting evidence on you. You got me fired for trying. The Chronicle was scared of a libel suit. All of a sudden, my managing editor, Williams, doesn't seem to be very afraid of your suing the paper. Now, what could be the reason for him giving me my job back? It could be that that statement from Thompson did it, couldn't it? All right, now sweat it out, Curtis. You'll be seeing your picture in the Chronicle with bars in front of you and a number on your chest in about 48 hours. Not even one of your phony alibis can keep you out of this rap, big shot.
I suppose I should be annoyed by such juvenile threats, but I just don't seem to be able to take you seriously, Ames. And the next time I give you my attention, you'll never work on a newspaper again. Coming with me, Rogue?
No, not now. I think I'll stay here and use the telephone.
You could see and feel the hate that hung in the air in that press room like a cloud of poison gas after Fred Curtis left. Clark Ames went all to pieces as soon as we were alone, paced the floor, said he'd talk too much. He was as worried as a man with a three-horse parlay and two winners. Pretty soon, though, he left, and I used the telephone to call a couple of girls I know. They weren't home. I was about to give up and go to dinner by myself when I turned around and saw Betty Callahan standing there behind me, looking like $1 million, which is a nice figure, which is what she has, if you know what I mean. Betty had a funny little quizzical smile on her face.
Hello, Richard. What's the matter? Aren't you having any luck?
Well, honey, I was just going to call you.
You mean that if Alice isn't home and Liza doesn't answer, I'm next in line?
Oh, now you know better than that. You're always first on my list.
Remember, Richard, I was standing here when you were phoning.
Sure. I was just trying to get a substitute, that's all.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you want? The names of some girls and a few phone numbers?
Now, don't look at me like that, Betty. The only reason I was calling those other girls was because I couldn't find you.
Well, I'll forgive you if you'll take me to dinner and then to the theater to see Tallulah Bankhead.
Oh, my goodness, you have such expensive taste.
Oh, really, my dear man. I have something infinitely better. I have two passes for the show.
Well, good. I've got two passes for a drive-in. Come on, I want to see if I can walk through that door without eating the jam off of it. I'm hungry.
So am I. That's the only reason you have a date with me tonight, Richard.
Well, then come on. All through that hamburger, I kept dividing my thoughts between how such a little girl could eat so much food and that scene in the press room at the Hall of Justice. I knew Fred Curtis for what he really was, cold-blooded and completely ruthless. I remembered that look in his eyes as he left the press room. A little puzzlement, a little fear, and a great deal of malice. Even if nobody else believed the story Ames told, I was sure that Curtis more than half believed it. And that meant trouble for somebody. Betty and I finished our dinner at last, and in spite of everything she could eat, I still had money enough to pay for it and a cab to the theater. We were just back in our seats after the second act intermission when I heard my name being paged.
If Richard Rogue is in the audience, will he please report to the lobby? Mr. Richard Rogue, please report to the lobby.
Isn't that a sort of obvious piece of publicity, Richard?
How the devil did anybody know I was here?
You better go see what's so important. But you hurry back.
I'll be right back, baby. I had a bad hunch as I walked up that aisle. Those little chills that always race up and down my spine when I'm walking into trouble were acting up. I didn't know what to expect as I walked out into the lobby. Then I saw Clark Ames standing there. His face was as white as a dove's wing, and his eyes had the strained look that is the aftermath of seeing violent death.
Rogue.
Yeah, what's the matter, Ames? You look like you've seen a ghost.
I've seen something worse, Rogue. You gotta come down to the Chronicle with me.
Now, get a hold of yourself. You're shaking like a dice cup. What's the matter?
Williams, my managing editor, was just killed.
Huh?
Murdered in his office.
That's the beginning of our story. We'll continue in just a moment, but first, here's Jim Doyle.
Romance and soft feminine glamour are back in style. Women are taking off the bandanas they donned in War Plants and are again letting their hair reflect moonbeams and stardust. That's why Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo is in more demand now than ever, because Fitch's Saponified Shampoo brings out the radiant beauty of your hair. Its fragrant, creamy lather cleanses so thoroughly and rinses out so completely. Fitch's Saponified Shampoo contains its own patented rinsing agent, so no special after-rinse is needed. And best of all, you can wash your hair as often as you like with Fitch's Saponified Shampoo, and it will never become dry or harsh-feeling. That's because this shampoo is made from pure, natural oils that keep your hair ever soft and lustrous. Ask for Fitch's Saponified Shampoo the next time you're at your beauty shop, or buy an economical bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. And now we return to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
I was working. The publisher of the Chronicle was paying me a grand for putting the long, cold finger on the murder of Williams, the managing editor. I was pretty sure I knew who the murderer was, so it looked like a soft buck. When Ames and I arrived at the Chronicle, homicide was already there. My friendly enemy, Lieutenant Urban, was in charge, as usual. He walked over from where he was examining the remains of the late Mr. Williams.
Hey, Sam, help me with this.
What are you doing here, Rogue?
Now, Urban, you know whenever anything comes along you boys can't handle, they always send for me.
Who's paying you?
The publisher of this paper. Now, shall we go on with the third degree or shall we get the work on the murder?
What do you know about it?
More than you do. When was he killed?
The medical examiner says he got it about 2 hours ago.
Mm. Stabbed to death with his own copy shears, huh?
Yeah, the last edition had already gone in. No one else was in the city room when it happened.
Found a motive?
Well, look at the office. Every file's been emptied. The murderer was looking for something, Rogie.
Yeah, I wonder if he found it.
You wouldn't know what it was, would you?
Yeah, I might. I might at that. I heard the Chronicle had a signed confession from Don Thompson. We're going to run it tomorrow.
Now, what was Thompson's confession? Come on, Rogue. You might as well give me all of it.
Well, it seemed Thompson was confessing that he had been paid quite a sum of money for a job of perjury by Fred Curtis, commonly known as the alibi master. In words of one syllable, so you can understand it, Urban, Thompson sold the Chronicle information which would have put Curtis away for about 10 years.
Curtis, eh? Well, looks like this is going to be a simple case.
Could be, yes. Hey, Ames, you know where Williams kept that Thompson confession?
It was in the top drawer of this file. It's gone.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess that settles that, Urban.
It's too easy. Curtis knows every trick in the book.
Hello, Urban. May I come in?
Yeah. We were just talking about you, Curtis. You're very welcome.
I figured I would be.
Why did you kill him, Curtis? You knew you'd be the number one on the suspect parade.
Oh, that's not very smart, Rogue. If I had killed him, I would have been much more clever about it. I wasn't within 100 miles of here when he was killed.
Well, that sounds familiar.
I know I'm wasting my time asking this, Curtis, but you can prove that alibi, can't you?
Of course. I was on my ranch in Antelope Valley when I heard over the radio that Williams had been killed. I suppose my friend Rogue has told you of the fantastic story a drunken reporter named Ames was shouting in the press room at the Hall of Justice today.
Yeah, I told him. He knows all about it. Oh, incidentally, Thompson's little composition is missing. The man who killed Williams lifted it.
Very convenient for you, wasn't it, Curtis?
Convenient? Oh, there never was such a confession. There couldn't have been. Because there wasn't the slightest background of truth for the wild tale Ames told today.
Okay, Curtis. We'll let you know what we think of the story after we've checked your alibi. You were on your ranch in Antelope Valley when you heard the report of Williams' death.
Yes.
That's about 100 miles from here, right?
Approximately. As soon as I heard the report of the death, I knew I would be a suspect. So I started to town. I stopped in a bar in Palmdale for a drink on the way in and then came directly to the Chronicle office without stopping. My car's at the curb now in front of the building.
Ryan,
check those alibis.
Oh, they'll check, Lieutenant.
I'm sure they will. The alibi master would never slip up on his own alibi.
That's right. I'm sorry to disappoint you, Rogue.
I'm sorry to be disappointed, Curtis. You sure you don't know anything about this murder? You didn't hire someone to do it for you, did you?
Of course not. I had nothing against the man. Why should I want to kill him?
You can go, Curtis. We'll try to break that alibi or find the boy you hired. Until we do, take it easy.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Oh, you can reach me at my office if I can be of any further use to you.
Oh, Curtis, are you going back toward the Biltmore Theater?
Mm-hmm.
I got to get back there. I left my car there. And, oh, brother, Betty. Ooh, she'll massacre me.
I'll give you a lift. Come on, Rogue.
This Curtis guy was strictly the deluxe type. His car was a long, sleek, black job a few sizes smaller than the Queen Mary, but with approximately the same amount of power. We got in, Curtis turned on the ignition, and the gas gauge swept clear across to full. Curtis had said he drove directly from the bar in Palmdale to the Chronicle office without stopping. About 70 miles. Mr. Curtis's carefully planned alibi was not so carefully planned. I was enjoying a short ride with a murderer. He saw my eyes on the gasoline gauge, followed them with his own, and then put his hand in his coat pocket. I knew there was a gun in it. As we drove away from the curb, I picked up a copy of the Chronicle, which had been lying in the seat beside me. I thought perhaps if I could hide my thoughts a little better, if I pretended a great nonchalance, with no part of which I felt,
Curtis was not sure that I'd attach the proper importance to the story the gas gauge told. He was being nonchalant, too. I had a little dough riding on prevaricator. 7th today. When I came out.
Ought to be in that paper. Final results.
Where'd you get it?
I bought it in Farmdale.
Then? This is the Bulldog edition.
Oh.
The Bulldog edition is sold only on the streets in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's right. I'm afraid I made a mistake, huh, Ron?
Yes, I'm afraid you've made two of them, Curtis. This paper and that full gas tank. You didn't drive 70 miles in this gas heater without stopping and arrive here with a full tank, did you?
You're very observant. Looks like you're cracking my alibi, huh?
You killed Williams, didn't you?
Yes, I had to. I had to get that confession of Thompson's. It would have ruined me. I owe that impetuous reporter a great debt for tipping me off to the Chronicle's plans for crucifying me.
You have any plans for me?
Yes. Yes, I think I have it worked out. I'm going to drive you out to the suburbs to a spot I know that's probably deserted by this time. Now, if you were found there, shot...
Aren't you overlooking something? If I'm found there, shot, Urban is going to pick you up fast. You're going to do better than that, Curtis.
Well, if there were signs of a struggle and your wristwatch had been set an hour ahead and smashed to set the time of death, and I was at Lincoln Heights Jail talking to a client at the time the police would figure the murder took place, that might do it, don't you think, Rogue?
No. It's no good, Curtis. You're slipping. In the first place, there's always the possibility that a shot would be heard.
The district I have in mind is deserted by now, or will be before I consummate my plan.
And Urban is no fool. He'll be awfully suspicious. Might give you the paraffin test on your gun hand. You know, I don't think you're going to handle the situation that way, Curtis. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be kind of hard to handle, even for you.
You know, Rogue, it's amazing how fascinating crime, I mean the actual act of committing a crime, can be. Have you ever killed anybody?
No. Now look, Curtis, I suppose you know that you're going to get caught.
I know nothing of the kind. Successful crime is nothing more than planning, careful planning. Oh, I'll grant you, Rogue, that I'm going to be suspected of your murder. But I'll never be convicted for it. I won't take any chances.
You're wrong, Curtis. You talk like a sick man. You can't beat the law. If you commit a crime, you're going to pay for it. Let's go down to police headquarters and talk this thing over with Urban. What do you have to win by adding another murder to your score?
Rogue, I love life too much, and I love success too much to let anything stand in the way of my life as I live it. You just can't understand that, can you? You think that a man of my background and position must be horrified at the thought of taking the life of another human being. Well, you're wrong, Rogue. I have my own code, my own ethics. You know and I know hundreds of reputable businessmen in this town who spend their days and nights, their lives, grasping for money, for power over the lives of more and more people. Well, when one of them wrecks another man's life or his business, it amounts to a victory, which is celebrated by the wrecker at his club that evening. If the victim commits suicide, and he often does, they're sorry. That's all. It's just business.
What are you trying to prove, Curtis?
I'm explaining why I killed Williams. Why I have to make sure that you and the knowledge you have of my affairs are disposed of. It's a matter of business, Rogue.
No, you're crazier than a coot. You know that, Curtis. You're not talking like a rational person. You're going to pay for this crime.
Don't move. Put your hands back in your lap. I think you know that I won't hesitate to kill you here on the road if it becomes necessary. Set your watch up an hour. 1 hour, Mr. Rogue.
Okay. You got a new plan?
Yeah. We're on the outskirts of town. I'm going to stop the car when I come to an advantageous place. And I'm going to knock you unconscious with a tire iron, smash your watch, throw you onto the road and run over you. To all appearances, your murder will be the result of a hit-and-run accident. I will have an alibi which will make it impossible for me to have been in the vicinity at the time of the accident. That, I think, is a perfect plan.
It's full of holes. In the first place, Urban will check the tread on your tires, and in the second, he'll never fall for that smash watch trick. You'll never get away with it, Curtis. You've been buying up juries and alibis and evidence for so long that you forgot that they're honest people. People who can't be bought. Urban's one of them. He'll stay with you until he gets you for killing me, Curtis. Now, you'll have to come up with a much cleverer scheme than what you thought of so far.
Maybe you're right, Rogue.
What are you doing?
What I'm going to do now, Mr. Rogue, won't need any alibi.
Look out, you fool. Curtis! Curtis, give me that wheel!
Sit back there, Rogue.
Get your foot off that accelerator. You're going to hit... Turn that wheel! Give me that wheel, Curtis!
Goodbye, Mr. Rogue. Let go of that wheel. Let go or I'll shoot!
We'll continue in just a moment. But now, here's Jim Doyle.
Time is a valuable thing these days, and no man wants to spend any more of it than possible on shaving. So you busy men who want to cut down on your shaving time, use Fitch's No Brush Shaving Cream. This swell cream gives you a close, comfortable shave in a hurry. It's an expert blend of three important shaving ingredients. These ingredients enable your razor to fairly sail along without nicking or scraping. The creamy, non-greasy texture of Fitch's No Brush saves you time, too, for it won't clog your razor or the drain. And with all your speed in shaving, you'll find that Fitch's No Brush leaves your face feeling smooth and cool.
You men who prefer a lather cream will find Fitch's Brush Cream also gives quick, comfortable shave. It makes lots of rich lather that stays moist all during the shave, then rinses off easily.
Both Fitch's Brush and Fitch's No Brush shaving creams come in generous 25 and 50 cent sizes. For shaving speed and shaving ease, switch to Fitch. Now back to Dick Powell as Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
When I saw what that madman Curtis was going to do, I knew I had nothing to lose. He had that big, powerful car wide open and heading straight for a stone wall. I tried to grab the wheel and turn it. He fired at me just as we crashed into the wall. I only remembered turning the wheel enough to deflect the shock a little. And then, then I was on cloud number 8. Hugo was there, waiting for me.
Oh, Chief, you had a close call there.
Hey, Hugo, where have you been?
Well, I had a little trouble with the OPA about Cloud 8, and I had to go and see them.
Oh.
Then I had a tough time getting a reservation back. But I'm glad to see you, Rogie, with your usual bump on the head.
Am I dead?
Only the good die young, Rogie. Hey, you got company. An old friend of yours is up here. Look, over on Cloud 9. See him?
Oh, Curtis. He isn't dead either, huh?
Oh, no. But I sure thought I was out of a job when I saw you slamming into that wall, Rogie. You ought to take better care of yourself. For me.
Yeah. Look, I gotta get out of here, Hugo. How badly am I hurt?
Oh, you're okay. That car was built to take it. You won't be playing any gin rummy for a while, and you can't collect on your insurance.
Give me a little boost over the side. Will you, Hugo? I gotta get downstairs before Curtis does.
Sure, Chief. Here you go. So long, Rogie.
Rogie.
Hello, Irvin. Fancy meeting you here. Receiving hospital?
Yeah. What have you been up to? What were you trying to do? Kill yourself?
No. Is Curtis here?
Yeah. Now, I'll ask the questions. What happened?
How badly is Curtis hurt?
Leg broken, that's all. He's still unconscious.
Look, Irvin. He killed Williams. He tried to kill me.
He admitted it, eh?
Yeah, after I caught a couple of flaws in his alibi.
You got enough dope on him to make it stick?
I don't know. It would be my word against his. But I got an idea. An idea that might sense the deal.
Every once in a while, you do have a good one.
Get the chief surgeon over here, will you? I'm going to need his help.
Okay. Here. Lie down there. I don't want anything to happen to you, Rogie. I was worried about you. You're such a pest, I'd miss you like the devil. I'll get the doc.
When I outlined my scheme to the chief surgeon, he looked for a minute like he might call in the head of the psychiatric ward. But with Urban's help, I finally got him to agree to play it my way. He bandaged Curtis from head to foot.
put constricting straps across his chest and cinched him down like a saddle on an outlaw horse. Then they put him in an oxygen tent and brought him out of shock. Urban pulled out all of the stops as he stood by the side of the hospital bed and talked to the murderer, like a father.
Curtis, can you hear me?
Yes. Who is it?
Lieutenant Urban. Did the doctor give you the bad news yet?
Yeah. Crushed chest. Nothing they can do, I guess.
No. You haven't got long to live. Anything you want to tell me? Might as well go with a clear conscience. Did you kill Williams?
Yeah. Yeah, I killed him. I had to do it. I killed him.
Well, that was the end of the case. Brilliant piece of work on my part, I thought. Going through that little tableau of making Curtis believe he was on his deathbed and had nothing to lose by confessing the murder. And, I love that Urban. He's so proud of the fact that he confined his remarks to the truth when he was talking with Curtis. All he said was, "You haven't long to live." Remember? That was true enough. Curtis was executed a few months later, which proves that the theory about perfect crimes is as foolish as a sure way to beat roulette. And Betty, well, I left her in a theater when I started out on this case. It cost me about what I made, $1,000, to get her over her peeve. So I broke about even on the deal. Oh, well, you know the old saying, a fool and his money are some party. You know what I mean? This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and D. Engelbach produced and directed. Don't forget, you've all got a date with us next Thursday night. We have a story for you about the last time a rogue saw prison. So make a date with us, will you? Thanks for listening. And now, once again, here's Jim Doyle.
Be with us again at the same time next week. Oh, and be sure to see Dick Powell in his latest RKO picture, Cornered, at your local theater soon. Remember, tune in next Thursday, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. Remember, if dandruff is your problem, ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. It's the only shampoo made whose guarantee to remove dandruff is backed by one of the world's largest insurance firms. No other shampoo can make this statement. Ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug or toilet goods counter, beauty or barber shop. Fitch is spelled F-I-T-C-H.
More from Johnny Dollar, Rogues Gallery, Case Closed, and all of the Relic Radio podcasts at relicradio.com. We'll also find our Shoutcast stream there with even more old-time radio streaming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, you can donate at donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. Your support makes all of this possible. Thank you to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll talk to you again next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.